Thank you, Dave. I'm Louise. I'm an addict.
Hi, Louise.
Yeah, and it's nice to be here. And yeah, thank you, Adrian. That was good to listen to and just calm me down. And yeah, I feel lucky to be sat here, you know, hopefully trying to give a message. I've been around quite a while. This next month, it's going to be 10 years. And yeah, when I first came around, there's no way. You know, if I came to a meeting like this and saw someone sitting up sharing, you know, there's no way. I think that would never, ever be me. I'm never going to sit there and speak. And I was really scared to just open my mouth. It was really tough. And I've just sort of said a little prayer before I share. And I can, you know, during the week I could really blow this out of proportion. You know, I think about it and feel a little bit that horrible sort of didgy feeling in your stomach. And 40 minutes seemed like a long, long time. And then I thought, well, you know, I've been around 10 years, surely you can speak for 40 minutes. But even if I don't, what is the worst thing that can happen? And I sort of learned in NM to just turn up, you know, say a little prayer and do your best. And usually that is, you know, that is good enough. That's all I can do. And yeah, I don't quite know. I was thinking, should I go back to the embryo to make it into 40 minutes? Like, where do I start? But yeah, maybe I will just sort of go back to the beginning and where I come from. And Adrian was talking about communication, and I've learned that here as well, because, you know, my family, I'm sort of middle child, I've got an older sister, younger brother, and my parents had us young. My mum got pregnant with my sister when she was 15, and then 5 years later had me. And then 5 years later, I had my brother. And the communication between those two, they were sort of thrown together. My dad had just come over from Italy, he was working, and got my mum pregnant, and they were sort of thrown together. And it was a really, you know, I don't know if they were necessarily a good match. They're very different people. And the cultural thing as well, like my dad comes from a sort of very macho Italian culture, you know, where they sort of... women bring up the children and cook, and my mum's sort of ideas on life are very different to his. And yeah, there's a lot of sort of screaming and shouting and clashing, and you know, and at home, you know, and violence as well. You know, my dad was very immature, you know, and he'd sort of like smash the chair over the washing up because it wasn't done, or because he'd smash his plate on the floor because his tea wasn't ready. So ridiculous things like that. And you know, when I was little, I'd just sort of be really quiet and just be away from all that. And, you know, my dad was away working, like when he'd come in, he'd sort of sit down, have his dinner on a tray, with his bottle of wine, turn the TV on. And there wouldn't be sort of a lot of, you know, when we had a family meal, sat around the table, it was quite sort of, you know, you and I fought, it was quite sort of fraught. It wasn't like a relaxed, chatty sort of atmosphere. And we didn't, I don't know. And although there's lovely things about my parents, and there were really nice things that we did as a, you know, I did as a kid, a lot of the time I felt really anxious and found it quite difficult. So, you know, I kind of went through my younger life like that. My escape place was my gran's house. She's dead now. She lived in a little country house with just two other cottages next to it, and just fields all around. And I'd go and stay there, and that was my sort of, just like my sanctuary from home. I used to love going to stay there, and I had like a special tree that I'd go and I'd take the dog for a walk. And in the evenings, my nan, right from the age of about three, she'd give me a little glass of sherry, and we'd have sherries, and my uncle would drink his cider. Right from little, you know. And my mum said I used to run the shop park and sherry nanny. And right from a kid, I sort of liked that sort of, you know, drinking, just, you know, the feelings. And you know, after I was sort of even drinking and sort of listening to the radio, my aunt say, up the wooden hill. And, you know, I'd get home often, and, you know, the screaming or whatever, you know, the clashing, but just the atmosphere often at my house was just really quite heavy. And I'd often not want to be back there. And so I think, yeah. Just, yeah, and I was sort of, yeah, and I went to church. That was another sort of heavy thing that my dad, you know, we had to go to church. And in NA, I've sort of developed a really loving higher power, you know, and I pray, and I have a higher power that sort of cares for me. you know, it started off and came around just coming through other people, and or it can be sort of nature, or it can be just, you know, those weird happenings. And I've had that happen over the time I've been around, just, and even when I've been using, looking back, I've definitely sort of had stuff that has protected me. But when, you know, when I was growing up, I wasn't taught that this God was a loving God. I was like, you have got to go to church, or, you know, I remember my dad beating my sister up because she's like, she's older than me, so she's like kind of giving him lip, saying, I don't want to go to church, why are we going to church? My mum, who had sort of got into her feminism, said, I'm not going to church, because she had reeled off this list of stuff why she didn't want to go. And my dad like kicked and, you know, hit my sister, and she went legging it off. And this was on the way to church, which sort of defeats the object of what, you know, what is it about? Why are we going here? Yeah, and it's, is it about just confessing your sins and sitting, you know, in this sort of big church, smoky church? You know, I quite like all that ritual of it, but at the time it was just all quite scary, and as a sort of an anxious being anyway, it didn't really help. And so when I got into sort of, you know, the first things like drinking and getting stashes of drink from out my dad's cupboard, making mix-ups and going to youth club with my friends, downing a load. And it was just escape from the way I felt. I could cope with people because I was very self-conscious. But it didn't really do me any favours, you know, at all. But it made it easier for me to feel, you know. But I didn't look at what it was actually doing to me. It just felt, you know, easier. And I was like 12, and I sort of had my first boyfriend. And I remember at a party, someone came up with some gas, and we started doing that. And I'm just falling backwards in this patch of cabbages, and thinking, God, this is great. And then from then on, me and this particular boyfriend, we had a den that we'd go to, and we'd buy these cans of damp start on a Friday night with our pocket money, and go and sniff this. And when I look back, I just think, but all the things you know, as a 12-year-old child could be doing, to go and sit in this, it was a real dank, smelly, sort of dingy place under this shop. And we'd go and, like, you know, sniff this damp start, you know, and then he'd put me on the bus home, and I'd go home, sort of stinking of solvents. And my parents didn't want to know, I don't think, because at the same time, I'd been sniffing shoe conditioner at school with a friend. I got reported to the headmistress, and I went to a girls' grammar school, and it was like a big deal. My parents got called into the school. And before I went, you know, this is how the communication in my family was. My dad said to me, Have you been taking glue? Because if you have, I'm going to smash your face in, you know. And he's like, he's got this Italian accent. And I was like, okay. No, I haven't. And then sitting in the school, my mum came with me, and she's going, Louisa would never do that. She really wouldn't. You know, there's no way she would do that. And I was like, no, I haven't. No. And I sort of think back, and if communication had been a bit more open, and if I'd been able to say, well, yeah, this is what I've been doing, you know, would things have been different? I don't know, you know. Or would I have carried on my path? Because, you know, things progressed. You know, I got into sort of smoking hash, and I thought that was brilliant. Dropped out all my sort of school friends and got in. I got this about sort of 14, 15, got my biker boyfriend called Jippo. He used to come and pick me up from school in a lunch hour and nip me off, and we'd do hot knives and nip me back to school in this bike. And I think it was so brilliant, and I'd be back in like school in stitches laughing over the most, you know, like over the most ridiculous things. And I sort of, in that scene with him and his sort of friends, I felt really, I don't know, I felt good, but I was, you know, I was starting to really lose myself then. And I'd get, you know, my self-esteem would come from, you know, I remember like keeping up with everyone and doing loads of hot knives, and I got this nickname, the Hot Knife Queen, and I thought that was fantastic, you know, brilliant. You know, and I did, you know, have fun as well, started going to festivals, but already, right then in my teenage years, it started like narrowing my world, you know, because I thought I was more kind of adventurous than my friends, and because my school didn't want to do any of that, so I didn't hang out with them anymore. I just hang out with these other people that did drugs. So already, right then, I'd started to sort of put a judgment on other people and not want to know people that, if you didn't smoke, I didn't want to sort of hang out with you. You know, I only wanted to be with people that were doing that. And it drove me to do, you know, make, I really wanted to travel, wanted to go to, you know, someone had just come back from India with a load of charas and chillums, and I thought, yeah, that is, I really want to go there. And I didn't start at school, I dropped out of school, and I went to hairdressing college, and I was going to sort of train, and I had, you know, things that I wanted to do, I was going to come to London and go to theatrical hairdressing college. But all my sort of plans of things I wanted to do soon went out the window. I stopped that, went and got a job in a factory, worked for a few months and got some money together to go to India with a mate, which we did. And we had, you know, I have really good memories of that time, but also just how driven we were by using. And the first thing we did when we sort of landed in Delhi was like score and get ripped off. You know, it's the first thing. And just, you know, we had lots of adventures, but also really got ourselves into really dodgy situations, which, you know, that sort of lack of self-care, getting into really dangerous situations, seemed really quite exciting at the time. But when I look back, I just really, my care for myself was just getting sort of less and less. And, you know, things did progress, and I got into using heroin, and that was sort of, I started off at home, and then on my travels, you know, my first habit was out in Thailand. And I kind of just never thought that I would end up, you know, with a habit. I kind of just, I didn't even really want to get into using gear. You know, I just thought I'm happy with my sort of smoking and, you know, dabbling and other stuff. But a boyfriend that I went out with was doing it, and it just seemed like everything I'd heard wasn't true, and that I'd be able to control it and it would be fine. And of course, you know, it doesn't end up fine, and it just progressed and, yeah, it just got really messy. And I don't think I ever really want to be doing that. I wasn't someone that's tried it and thought, yeah, I'm home, this is it. And I did, you know, the first time I tried, I was really sick and felt ill and was throwing up all the next day. And I had to just keep on doing it to sort of, I don't know, just... But, yeah, my travels carried on, and I went, was working out in Holland and with this boyfriend and using and trying to get money together to go away, which we did. And the first sort of like spiritual awakening, or just moment of clarity, you know, you hear people say it, but I just could see what I was doing was out in India. And just lots of sort of bits of bad luck, and I sort of really believe in karma, and I thought, because I sort of knew what I was doing wasn't a good thing. And it just, you know, I could see how I was shutting out people, family, friends. And I just didn't like what I was doing. I really, you know, really wanted to stop at that point. It was quite a long time before I did. And I tried, you know, I did try. I got myself a load of sort of drugs to come off with at the chemist, and I did it. And I said to my boyfriend, we've got to give up now, right now, you know. And he didn't want to. He wasn't ready to stop. And I just thought, because I've got to, everyone else should want to right now. And, you know, the neighbour that was living with us, I was trying to tell him to stop, and the people down the road trying to tell them to stop. And like, you know, and I was suddenly really indignant about gear. I remember someone in Bombay, this street guy, coming up and offering me some, and I'm like, that stuff's shit, you know, I don't do that anymore, and being really like... And then as soon as I got back to England, I just got really depressed, and that was the first thing I did, was like, go in school. I just didn't know how to deal with feeling shit, you know, just... And, yeah, just life did, like you hear, get progressively worse. Yeah, that time I tried to give up in India, I sort of lost the plot big time. And then, yeah, I came back and thought, well, thought I was okay. I thought, I'll go back to Holland, and I know what I need to do. I need to just get money together and go travelling again, and that will sort me out. But the last time I went to Holland, I couldn't even save up money to go away. You know, I tried to stop using gear and was just getting right into crack, and every break time was just running down. There was a dealer living right in the caravan next door to me, just knocking on his caravan door, quick, you know, have a quick pint and rush back into work, feeling awful and like, I hope I don't see any bosses, just like mouth dry, just, you know, and each day I'd like be like, I'm not going to do this, not going to do this. And getting madder and madder, not sleeping. And not doing my work, like sneaking off, like I was supposed to like clean all this canteen and clean the loos, and I'd sneak off and try and get bits of sleep but be so paranoid, you know, because hiding in the corridor. And I ended up losing my job there, and it was like, I was amazed that they'd sacked me. I couldn't believe it at the time, you know, why have they sacked me? And I was shit at what I was doing. And my behaviour just, I don't know, I just left my caravan where I'd been staying, started like living in squats, didn't have any money, so I was like begging, was hanging out with sort of people from parties and just not putting anything back, not giving anything back, just expecting, you know, I was like lagging money, thinking, oh, I'm going to get a job, I'm going to get, you know, I'll pay this back soon, I really will, I'll pay this, you know, lend us a bit of puff, lend us $25, you know, I'll pay you back again. So I really had these sort of good intentions, and all the time I was sort of, you know, really not well. And in the end, I was back at the factory site one night, piping it, about to go to a party, and someone had phoned my mum up, and it had been the day after my grandfather's funeral. And she'd driven out, she'd got one of my best friends, to come with her. And they turned up at this factory site one night. And I was like, Mum, hi, what are you doing here? Like, really off my head and just, a real state. You know, someone had shaved my head and cut a big V out here, and I was probably about 6.5 stone at that time. I looked a real state. I was like, it's like she'd just strolled in and come to the party or something. And, you know, just before Christmas, and she'd just lost her stepfather, and she'd driven out, obviously, like, worried, sick, you know. And I just think back to that time of how she must have felt, and I was so disconnected from myself, and, you know, so unable to feel, so unable to sort of think about how she was feeling or anyone else. And she gave me a lift home, we got on the ferry, and my friend, I hadn't been doing gear that time, I'd just been doing crack. My friend had brought her methadone with her, and I glugged a load of that down. By the time we got to sort of the buffet to eat with my mum, I was like in my dinner like this. I just cringe when I think of how I was. And I was really not myself. I was like just fucking all, you know, just swearing all the time to my mum, and just really disrespectful and just mad, basically. And, life kind of went on in that vein. Just, you know, I got back to England and met this guy that had just got out of prison and had a dyke script, and I thought, yeah, this seems all right, and we made a really good couple for a while. And, you know, he'd be babbling with his sort of, after just having a hit in his groin, with his trousers around his ankles, and then there'd be me saying, oh, can I, you know, just, oh, you know, a nutty sort of nice using couple we were for a while. And, you know, eventually I just did have enough, and I really wanted to stop. And I'd go into my local drugs project and say, I want to stop, I want some help. And I'd be in tears. And I sort of moved out from there, moved in with this friend that was dealing, and I was staying there. And I decided one night to go and try an NA meeting. And I'd like to say, and it was like a flash of light, and I just got clean, but it wasn't. I went, and I thought, God. You know, this guy told this really mad using story about losing his leg nearly, and so I was able to tune into that for the sort of time that he spoke, and then people were sharing back after. I couldn't really get what they were saying, and I just couldn't see how it was going to help me. And I was off my face when I went, so I didn't kind of take on board. But something probably did stick, because, you know, although I didn't go back to meetings for a while after that, I carried on using, carried on being desperate, carried on crying about what I was doing, but still, you know, going and doing the same thing, not doing anything different, staying with the same people. And it wasn't until I came to treatment, and it was a 12-step play. Well, they sort of promoted 12-step, they advised you to go to meetings. And I sort of said, I really don't want to go to a 12-step place. I'd chosen this place because it had massage, and they did group therapy and art therapy, and I thought, yeah, a bit of art and a bit of massage, it would be nice. And it's from there I started going to meetings. And to start with, you know, going to a meeting clean and being with people, like, gave me a headache. Just like, But people were nice, you know, and I just did keep going back. And people, you know, would remember your name and come and say hello and ask how you were. And I sort of kept going, even though I found it really difficult. And, like, you know, I like the sort of smoking candle lit, so dark, and so people couldn't see you, and just smoking meetings. Because I found it really hard to just open my mouth and say, you know, what was going on. And I half the time didn't know what was going on, for, you know. I just was so numb, I think, and so disconnected. But the thing is, people here don't judge you, you know. You can sort of stumble a few words and be really, like, a mess, and people just still keep welcoming you, keep saying coming back, and generally want you to get better and know that you can, actually. You know, I see people coming in the door, you know, a real mess, and I know that if they stick around, they're going to get love and support here, and they can get well. And I've really, you know, I've experienced that, and I've seen so many people kind of come in a real mess and just really blossom and do really nice things with their lives. And it's not that life suddenly disappears and you just float off and everything's brilliant. You know, like, you actually start being able to live life and take part. You know, and things that I find really, you know, simple things from a lot of people, like just starting college and being part of a class and part of a group, which I found really difficult. Having this helped me. Starting work, something I never thought I'd be able to do. Having people here, you know, hearing how they kind of let go of that benefit book. I really didn't want to let it go. It's like, oh God, I can't, you know, I can't. But I did, you know, I did. And I'm working. And, you know, I had a child in recovery. And that was kind of unmanageable behaviour, but something that's, you know, been a real gift. You know, that was like a Manchester convention, a European convention. Staying with an old using friend that is clean and met in recovery, and it's that sort of false intimacy. We're like best mates because he used to come and score with me, aren't we? And now we're clean, so aren't we great mates? So we shared a room and ended up like making my son, which is, you know, I remember that night. It was like a full moon night. It was kind of 60 days clean after 50, you know, been around for a bit, and 60 days clean at a convention. And it was obviously meant to be, but, you know, because I, you know, I didn't plan to be a mother, and that's been one of the most lovely things. And, you know, I'd never sort of experienced love like that, and that's, you know, I've kind of had that in recovery. It's so nice. And, yeah, I followed suggestions, got service, did as much, you know, tried to do all the positions at group level, and went into the helpline. And that, you know, stuff like that really helped me and helped build my self-esteem, helped me to get to know people. And it's really nice, people that I trained with in those early days, I still see that around. And it's nice, I like the people, I like seeing people that are familiar faces that stick around. I don't necessarily know everyone really intimately. You know, I know I've lots of friends here, but it's just seeing faces and people that you hear over time, it's really comforting to know that people are going to be here. And I had actually someone say to me today, I'm nearly 4 years clean again. And I said, it was really nice coming back and seeing you still there and knowing that I can do it. If you stuck around, if you're still here, then I can do it. And I don't know if that was a 5 minute, but no, it was like just a little.
Can I ask you a question?
No.
About Wayne Chambers.
I'll speak to you after, if that's all right. Sorry, where was I going?
I'm a journalist, sorry.
Yeah, anyway, so, yeah, service really helped me, and, yeah, just keep coming. And I got a sponsor, and started working the steps. And, it's actually been a really slow process. I mean, I had all sorts of excuses, like, oh, I've got my... I mean, it was. I did feel it was a lot to deal with, just being a single mum in London, a new place. But, you know, that I got through with the support of the fellowship. I went to, you know, I went to a women's meeting regularly, and there were other mums there with kids. And I took on a position there so that I would get there, because I'd you know, I was exhausted at that time, just sort of coping with early recovery, coping with a new kid, and, you know, which is sort of kind of all new. And it was like kind of coming to meetings that helped me and staying connected that helped me through that time. But I have, you know, I've never got up to step 12, but I do think I'll try and, you know, carry a message. I've just started my step 11 and started a meditation course that I'm doing, and it's like it's an omming one where you go in om and then you sit and you breathe in om and you breathe out om. And it's quite nice. I mean, I've done a lot of sort of yoga and stuff like that, and I've found that sort of the longer you stick around, you kind of start to kind of treat yourself a lot better. And you start to try and put nice food in you, and you try and do nice things for yourself, and consequently nice things for other, you're able to do nice things for other people and care about other people. And my family are really back in my life. And, you know, both my parents, you know, so they feel like they've got me back. And my mum said, you know, she wished I was dead when I was using, because she just couldn't cope with how it was, which I thought was a bit harsh. But I can kind of, you know, I as a mum as well, I know how horrible it must have been, and horribly just so painful. So yeah, with my sponsor, my first sponsor, she was really just kind and loving, and, you know, didn't push me, and so I took my steps very slowly. But I think everyone has a different process, and I don't think if I'd have had someone said, you've got to do this really fast, you've got to get this done, and, you know, maybe I wouldn't have, I don't know. It has been a slow process. And my step one was just my admission of that I needed help, that I was powerless. And that's the first thing, and, you know, and it does, you know, people coming and hearing you around, it does take a lot of courage to think, you know, you need help, and just to be humble enough to kind of say that and it's hard, isn't it, when you first come to actually ask for help. It just feels so alien, because I've been so used to kind of looking after myself, doing stuff with myself, and not really asking anyone else for anything, because when you're living with lots of using people aren't really able to kind of give you help or support or advice. It's just like the nicest thing they could do is, like, you know, give you a hit, or, you know, roll a spliff for you, or, you know, not really able to give you the kind of just being there, and just, I don't know, I've learned so much just by listening to people or from other people's experience. And my step two is like, you know, asking to be restored to sanity, or coming to believe that I could be. You know, and I definitely had, I didn't have any kind of qualms that I had been really mad, and a lot of my behaviour and things I'd done were really mad. And, you know, when I did actually sort of lose the plot, and was like kind of, you know, ants were talking to me, and I was like, you know, making numbers for sort of, you know, kind of like, I would like to make connections with everyone, every number, and every person I met, you'd have to know their birth year, and I could figure something out about everyone I met through their birth year, and I'd tell them stuff about themselves, and, you know, suddenly I was this numerologist, and I thought I was good, and this guy that I've seen was evil, and we had to be together to balance the world, and I had this real grandiose, slightly, idea of myself, and, anyway, so I had no, you know, admitting that I'd kind of been insane, and just, you know, just using in itself, or sticking a needle into yourself, that horrible, being that cruel to yourself is insane behaviour. So, believing that I could be restored to sanity, just, you know, even just my insanity of, like, not being able to kind of speak with, you know, when I first came out, even when I wasn't using, being able to sort of open my mouth and feel I'm worth being part, you know, I'm the same as everyone else, and what I have to say is okay. You know, I'd give myself such a hard time, and just, you know, there's so many, yeah, so even today, just there's so many times when I can just kind of think, yeah, that's actually bad thinking, I just need to sort of say a little prayer and, you know, maybe get some advice, and I can be restored to sanity around whatever it is. And then my step three, the first time I did it was in a park with a friend. We both decided to sort of hand our will and our lives over. And that's just trusting that sticking around and, you know, handing your life over. I didn't really know what, but trusting that I was going to be all right. And if I kept coming and took advice, that, you know, my life would be all right. Because I didn't know. I was new to London. I was in a new city. I didn't know many people. I felt really scared. But I just sort of had this feeling that I was going to be all right, which is something I hadn't had when I was using for a long time. And I'd been in and out of detox, and each time, you know, I'd end up just using because I didn't know how to live, and it didn't feel like things would be all right. And I had a real fear of, like, kind of going into depression again. And I'd been depressed and just in that sort of blank, floating, no thoughts kind of space where you can't connect with anybody or anything, and nothing kind of brings you joy, and I just feared that but in recovery I didn't feel like that. I kind of felt like, don't pick up, follow these suggestions and I will be alright, and I have been. You know, my step forward, my sponsor, just taking a more inventory and having a good look at my life and what I've been doing, and just trying to be honest with someone and trying to be honest with myself. Trying to be honest with myself, and do you know Jane Chambers is? Okay, well, maybe I'll remember in a minute. I don't know. So trying to just get a good view and good look at who I am. Everyone's laughing. Does everyone know who's part of me? I can't think. Anyway. just trying to get a realistic view and just a more balanced view of who I am, and not feeling like just the worst shit in the world and like I can't do anything, and not feeling like, oh God, I'm better than everyone, I can't, you know, just that kind of real, just keeping yourself separate from everyone, basically, and not giving yourself a good, you know, I was giving myself really good excuses for not taking part and not joining in and not turning up, and there'd be all, a whole list of reasons why I shouldn't or couldn't. And, you know, it kind of strips away those in recovery, you know. You've got no, you know, if there's things you want to do and you're scared, you've got no reason to sort of run away, because you know that you can get support and you've got the love that you need behind you to kind of just get through whatever it is. And, so my step five was just saying it like it was. And, you know, I just got a lot of identification and a lot of, you know, just support and love. And my step six and seven, I found those quite cringy. It is just, you know, having a good look at your defects. But, you know, without admitting them and looking at them and having the humility to sort of admit, yeah, these are the areas which, you know, I find difficult, or it's, you know, if you can't admit them with yourself, it's hard to kind of accept anyone else. You know, if you expect yourself to sort of be perfect, you know, you expect too much. You know, we're not, we're human, and it's just kind of like six and seven, we're just like getting a little bit more human and a little bit more in touch, and you know, just being able to kind of like lighten up and have a laugh at yourself. And, you know, there's stuff that we all do that we probably, you know, find difficult, and it's just a bit more acceptance. And and my making amends, I think a lot of that, you know, my eight was like making my list and my nine's my amends, but a lot of that, with especially with family, had been by just staying clean and turning up and being there and remembering to, you know, to make, you know, call them up and ask how they are. And there's some amends which probably aren't, you know, this, you know, this an old boyfriend that I really wanted to go and see recently. I thought, I am an amends. And I heard someone said to me, it's that first boyfriend, Gippo, and he sort of carried on using it. And it's really in a bad way. And part of me wanted to go and make an amends for, like, when I left him, I just, like, been with him for about 3 years. It's the first love of my life. And I went to out one night and then just didn't come back. Came back the next day saying, oh, I just met someone else. But, you know, I felt really horrible about the way I sort of used to just use people without any, you know, just left, just like that. I don't know, just felt, I wanted to make amends, but he's in a bad way, and I thought maybe to go and say that now, and so many years ago, isn't appropriate. Maybe just to send a card and say, I hope your life's going well, and hope you're well. Because, you know, he's using and doing what he's doing. You know, I could just tell him what I'm doing, but maybe, I don't know. He's not in a good way, he's very ill. Someone said, you better be quick because he's not going to be around much longer, he's rotting. And it was another addict that told me that, and they always like have a nice way of putting things. It's that, I don't know if it's that sort of macabre gossip. You know, when you're using the gossip that goes round is just horrible, isn't it? It's not nice. But, so I don't know how bad he is, whether it's exaggerated, but I thought, I don't know. Anyway, my step 10s are just a way of keeping home and house in order, just, you know, dealing with stuff as they come up, keeping a sort of a view of my behaviour before, you know, I don't have to kind of like go right off the rails with things and let things get really out of hand. You know, I can kind of deal with life as it comes up and make amends as they come up if I need to, and face, you know, I hate conflict, but if it comes up, I need to be able to sort of like try and own my part in it. And if I've got, you know, if I need to say sorry, I need to say sorry for what I've done. And that's, you know, just simple things like that in recovery, just simple tools have really, you know, made my life a lot easier. Just being out, you know, being able to focus, realising that I can't, you know, change anyone else, or, you know, when I'd done stuff wrong, I wanted to say, I did it, but because, you know, like you made me do it, or I never wanted to take responsibility. And in recovery, it's just about being able to do that and look at my part and you know, just say sorry for my part, and that helps me, and hopefully it makes it easier for people I come into contact with. And my 11 now, I'm just trying to sort of pray for my higher power's will. And I do, you know, I do try and pray and pray for God's will. And it gets all kind of out of hand sometimes, and I forget, you know, I forget to pray, and I forget to do my, you know, sort of things that are good for me. And then I realise, you know, I'm not feeling good, and I have to kind of rein it in again and get back to sort of like doing stuff, you know, doing regular yoga, doing prayer, eating well, you know, just getting back on track, doing readings, maybe stopping at meetings. And I can forget quite easily, sort of, why am I here? Why do I keep coming? And even recently, I've been having a bit of a wobble, just finding life a bit difficult just because of a few changes. And at work the other day, this client that I'm treating, whose sort of life is quite falling apart because of the drugs she's been using, she was saying, yeah, I put down that drug, but I'm still going to the pub because I don't want to be too abnormal, you know, I want my life still to be normal. And I was thinking, God, yeah. And I was like thinking, God, she's right, you know, like, why, it seems a bit harsh, my life, maybe is it abnormal? And I started really questioning what I was doing, and it's because, you know, I'm just feeling a bit uncomfortable about feelings at the minute. And it, you know, I can have days where I can just really go off track and start questioning, who am I, what am I doing? And then I went to a meeting last night, and a newcomer did a chair. I was talking about, you know, drinking and why they're here, and it really kind of just, you know, brought me back. And I just thought, God, yeah, you know, I don't want to, you know, I'm not drinking because I don't want to, and I'd have a whole heap better quality of life just being free from, you know, I don't have to worry about controlling it, or, you know, that, you know, I've done enough of all that stuff, and it didn't do me any favours. And I can sort of forget And so, you know, I often have to kind of re-surrender to this program and sort of like think, oh yeah, this is, I have to remember why I'm here. And I do, you know, on times when I'm in touch with it, I just think it is really, you know, an amazing thing we have here, just a community of people that all, you know, when people are new, I want the best for them and I want them to get well. Or when people are having a difficult time, you know, maybe I won't necessarily do anything for them. It might just be sending up a good thought and saying, you know, thinking of something that someone shared in a meeting, thinking, you know, I hope, just a little prayer, just I hope they're all right and I hope they get the support they need. Sometimes it will be actually physically doing something and, you know, phoning someone up. Or, and I get that as well, if, you know, when I'm really struggling and if I, you know, when I first came out, I used to find it so hard to show, but it is important to try and open your mouth and let people know who you are and what is going on. Because, you know, nobody sort of reads minds. And although, you know, you might be fidgeting around and, like, hoping people know that you're having a really hard time, unless you actually sort of put it out there and say it, or a really good time, in fact, you know, just... It's just... Thank you. It's good to let people know where you're at, because then you can, you know, people are able to kind of come and support you, or you're able to go and support other people. If I've had... I'm able to go up to them and say, you know, or... talk with them about it. So good, that's nearly the 40 minutes. I hope I haven't... yeah, anyway, I've done what I've done. It's done, the deed is done. So, yeah, thank you for listening. And thank you all for being here. And I do, you know, I do feel really lucky to be part of this, because it's... No matter where I go, you know, people keep... NA is always here, and it's all over. And I know that wherever I go, if I need the support of it, it's here. And I'm glad to be able to be a part of that, to be able to sort of give it to other people when they turn up. So thank you, everybody.